is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and we are coming to you today with something very, very special. We are slowly getting close to our 10th anniversary. Dave, how does that make you feel? We're almost 10 years old.
It makes me feel that we've been doing this for a very long time. I was going to say that this is the longest quote-unquote job I've ever had. That's not quite true.
Yes,
I worked at the first place that I ever was employed at for 11 years. But
I got to beat.
After that,
I got 13 that, years.
See, there you go. But after that, this is the second longest quote-unquote job I've ever had.
Are you getting paid for this? Because when we say job, that's kind of a big part of...
I mean, you know, it's work, therefore it's a job, surely.
No, I think work that you do for free is called a hobby.
Oh, God.
And hobbies you get paid for are work.
Right. I've been doing this wrong all the time. Oh, well, never mind. But yes, 10 years.
Yes.
Coming up towards 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we've decided to, for the next six or so episodes, take a little bit of a different perspective. And we're going to look back. Not just, we've done retrospective episodes before, which have been more focused around sort of the podcast itself over the whatever period of time it might have been. But these next handful of episodes are going to kind of take a particular topic and just run with it. So, yeah, Jan, what more can we say about these things?
Well, when you say run with it, you do mean run with it. I'm going to do very minimal editing on these. So these will be organically created monstrosities that will run as long as they run. Now, we do have some kind of limitation on how long we can record before I have to go to bed, of course.
Yeah.
But these could be a bit longer, maybe shorter than usual, but I do think they will be longer.
Yeah, as we often say before we record, whenever we're talking about what topics we're going to discuss, we never seem to have a problem, as I would say, filling time. We always manage to, have things to say. We are opinionated, which probably is one of the reasons why we've been able to carry on doing this for so long.
Yeah, without opinions, doing a podcast for 10 years would be a very hard thing to do, I think.
It would be even harder to listen to.
But we wouldn't have to listen to it, so. One more thing, very important. These episodes will be our own personal opinions, how we look at things. You may agree or disagree with us, which is totally fine. Just don't come with complaints or anything like that. It's just how we look at the world and how we've seen the 10 years pass through. And will we be totally right for everybody and everything? Probably not.
Yeah. And very much not the opinions of our employers.
Nope.
And also bear in mind, as we have often mentioned, the good old reality distortion bubble. Like we each live in our own little distortion bubble. Our perspectives could be very, very different to your perspectives.
Which is totally fine.
That's how it works. Be inclusive.
Yeah, as long as you think how I think, obviously.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Now, for the first episode of our retrospective, we are going to go with a topic which is near and dear to our little podcast here, because it is the thing, the progenitor, the genitor, the creator, the spark behind the everything. Catalyst. It's more than that. It's the Big Bang of the roaring elephant. And that's, of course, big data. Big data, my God. Do you remember when we were young that big data didn't exist?
Big data. I mean, it's big and it's data. I mean,
and that was the episode, everybody.
And that was the episode. Thank you very much. 10 years. It's weird because big data is something that sort of exploded onto the technology horizon, and for, you know, a period of time, much of the time that we were, in fact, employed and working in this space, it was something that everyone was talking about. like lots of people aspirationally kind of experimenting with. It was a really kind of quite a different approach to things, like really sort of took like some of the standard practices and just blew them apart completely, in my opinion.
Yeah, for me, the big data was the last time, I would say, that innovation and creativity went crazy. Because the beautiful thing about big data, and it's a big sharp contrast from the whole AI thing we're going through now, which we're going to delve deeper in a bit probably, is that it wasn't just one thing that got more and more narrowified. It was, we can do this, and we can do this, and then we can do this, and things got built and built and built on top of it, which of course also caused the problem of big data. It was a huge octopus with 20,000 tentacles, and trying to get your head around it was almost impossible, which is basically why we had the job, to explain people how this thing was supposed to work. But it was a wave of creativity that built on top of each other. And in those days, new companies were created, new organizations were created, new ideas were created, and you could go everywhere and anywhere and do something that nobody had done before. And I'm just not just talking about the Spotify's and the Netflix of the world, but just the companies creating it, the vendors, the developers. It was a huge era of creativity. It was amazing to be alive in that time. And I was very lucky to be where I was in my life at that time, so that I could actually jump into that with 2 feet. That was amazing.
Yeah. And I don't think it's really possible to talk about big data, at least, you know, the progenitor big data, without talking about Hadoop. And when we talk about Hadoop, I at least tend to not just talking about MapReduce, but I'm talking about an entire ecosystem of technologies that you can plug together in a myriad of different interesting, exciting, sometimes scary, often very confusing different ways
Some of which actually worked.
Occasionally some of which actually worked.
By accident, but mostly.
But it was a time where I fully agree with your kind of, it was a time of almost rampant creativity where like new projects, new technologies and companies, yes, but more like projects and technologies were like springing up all over the place for a few years at least. Yep. And it seemed to be like very much the center of IT/tech innovation in a lot of ways, at least to me. And again, previous reality distortion bubble bias is very much in play here. But it definitely felt like there was a major revolution happening. Mm-hmm. People were all of a sudden able to do things that just hadn't been practical before with previous technologies. Like they were able to answer questions that had just been, frankly, like too difficult to answer. They would have needed too much processing and too much data that would have been too expensive to achieve before. And all of a sudden, I won't say these things were easy, because I don't think you can ever say that big data ever got to the point where it was quote unquote easy. But I do, like, it became possible.
Yeah. Yeah, because big data didn't get invented 10 years ago. Big data tooling got invented. Big data existed long before that. Because don't forget, when I was young, a hard disk of 20 megabytes cost a huge amount of money and was kind of the biggest thing you could get. So in those days, having a gigabyte of data was big data. You couldn't work with it because you simply couldn't store it or even compute it. Now, what happened 10 years ago-ish is that the tools, as you say, became available and it was able to solve a problem, because the data explosion, we have been talking so much about that in marketing speak, and some people still do, really did happen at some point. The internet happening, social media happening, we had these huge amounts, fire hoses of data being created, and you couldn't just work with them. Even if you had infinite money, the tooling simply didn't work until that beautiful MapReduce algorithm got encapsulated in the little elephant. And now people could do things. And again, that's a big contrast with what's happening with AI at the moment. AI at the moment is doing hypey, niche, funny, gadgety garbage. Big data. Yeah,
tell us how you really feel, Jon.
I'll wait in the next half hour.
Yeah. So before we go down, we're going to talk separately on a different episode about AI. So I don't want to. I don't want to talk too much about AI on this. But what I would say is, I think that I agree with you with the fact that it was when the tooling and the software really came around. But I also think that the timing really lined up with commodity hardware. At that time, also went through like a drastic acceleration in things like the core counts available in enterprise CPUs and the I/O bandwidth available that meant that you could, you know, RAM so many hard disks in these kind of chassis and things like that. The early sort of, especially the early days of big data, I think it was almost like this perfect culmination in the software ecosystem and the hardware ecosystems just both advancing at the same sort of time, reaching almost sort of a new high at the same time. I don't know whether, you know, one was inspired by the other or vice versa, but it seems to me, looking back on it, like that those things kind of happened around about the same sort of time. Do you think, am I misremembering things? No,
totally right. But I don't think it's coincidence. I think it's chicken and the egg. One made the other one possible. But before big data, the whole idea of big data is used, as you said, commodity hardware, typically in a BOL style cluster, just a bunch of nodes, connect them with networking, a couple of master nodes, and let the thing do its thing. Before that, you had the big databases. Those were only able to scale vertically, not horizontally. So what was Intel looking at, and AMD at a lesser extent, because AMD in those days was nowhere where they are today, they were looking at making single CPUs faster and making them halter and things like that, which of course made them more expensive, the total opposite of commodity hardware. When big data came along, there was suddenly a market for simpler CPUs, cheaper CPUs, but a lot of them. And definitely, I think Supermicro would not exist anymore without big data. They made a bundle, just being a kind of white label, if you like. I mean, in those days, nobody knew who Supermicro was. If you weren't in the industry and you weren't buying hardware, you had never heard of Supermicro.
Yeah.
These days, Supermicro is almost an enthusiast brand. I mean, I have my servers have Supermicro boards. That's definitely, I think, one helped the other. And of course, without that happening on the hardware side, on the software side, the software, the algorithms would have had no place to go. Because, I was working with NFS servers in those days. It was hugely expensive because they were scaling vertically, not horizontally. Using that kind of hardware for big data solutions would have made it way more expensive than the traditional data warehouses. Because don't forget that big data, Hadoop, one thing they also did, or maybe the intention of it, I don't know, was to displace the electronic data warehouses from a Teradata, SAP, what the other very expensive brand that I forget. It's like a two-word, Latin word, I forget it always. Doesn't matter. Very expensive things were replaced. And of course, you're going to replace so expensive algorithms of expensive software. You can't replace it with more expensive hardware. You need to have software that's payable or even free open sources, coupled with cheap, quotes, air quotes here, commodity hardware. And that's actually a lesson, I think, that people have forgotten. because we're still doing big data today. I'm not going to go into the today yet, but foreshadowing a little bit here, I'm still fighting, or more fighting today than in those days, to let people understand that you only need and should only have commodity hardware when you're looking at big data solutions.
Thinking sort of at the early days, and you mentioned sort of some of the things that big data started to tackle kind of later on in its, because earlier on in the big data sort of timeline, it was mainly about, as I probably said earlier, like answering questions that had analysis. Previously been, analysis on data sets that were previously
that didn't fit in Excel.
Yeah, just too large to be comfortably, sensibly, easily processed. And then as the technology matured or evolved, that sort of changed a little bit. And in my mind, like the big data ecosystem started sort of attacking or competing, is probably a better way to put it, with some of the more traditional solutions, because it had gotten more mature to the point where you could use it for some more traditional like solutions, like, as you say, like the kind of enterprise data warehouse, EDW kind of offload was one way to put it. You know, some people were completely replacing their enterprise data warehouses with big data solutions.
Talking about the area of OLTP or OTLP.
Yeah. And all the various kind of different engines that sprung up around that sort of time. But at this was also, I think I'm right here, and you would probably know this better than me, but I think I'm right in saying that around the same time as that was happening, we were also starting to see a lot more focus and a lot more interest in machine learning with kind of big data technologies / big data data sets. Am I remembering that right? Because I don't feel that machine learning was as prevalent initially. People were using, I want to say people were using like relatively simplistic like algorithms very early on, but it as it matured, I want to say that like if I felt like machine learning started to gain a real kind of foothold in the big data world.
I think real time came first. Because yes, at the beginning it was doing SQL queries on more data than would fit in your SQL database.
Yeah.
That's why Hive came from, so people could still use SQL to do analytics on their data. And then, in my opinion, real time came first, because I think Storm was a bigger thing than Spark for a while.
Oh yeah, I think you're right. I was thinking that like it almost branched out all at once, but no, I think you're right. I think real time
to do the machine learning.
Yeah. So this shows how much that if you really start thinking about it. But real time was about, in my mind, two different things. Like you had real time being used in terms of kind of decision making along the way, but also you had like real time processing for ingestion as well.
It was kind of the whole thing about schema on read, schema on write, right? I mean, ingesting data is not enough. You have to have a schema somewhere. Now, Hadoop famously was schema on read. It basically means dump it in a bucket. And when you read it, we will...
A lake, darling, a lake.
Well, by today's standards, the lakes from those days were buckets. I mean, we're talking about the big data then. We had no idea. But yeah, so, and what the storm kind of thing kind of brought to it was indeed that you could have a whole flow data coming in and being almost in real time available for use, whatever that use was. So have everything happening. And the only way to do that was to load a lot of stuff in memory. Mm-hmm. Because if you have to write a disk and read it from disk, real time goes out the window, even today. Yeah. And that, I think, is what we needed before we could go to machine learning. Because to train the machine learning algorithm, you typically want to have stuff in memory. I mean, that's what Spark is. It's an in-memory data engine. Yeah. And that's hugely expensive because you have to replace your disks by DIMMs, and that's more expensive. But without the real-time-ishness, having that, put that mindset of let's put it in memory, which is not cheap, which kind of goes away from the commodity hardware thing a little bit. But of course, they did smart things to make caching layers and stuff like that to still make it available. And that then slowly went into the whole Spark thing where you had the data loaded in memory and you could train your models, and not just train, but also infer the models. And where training could be, well, we do it last night, who cares? Inferring, which means making the models predict something or classify something, had to happen in real time. Otherwise, it was pretty much unusable. So that's how it is. And the reason I remember this is because when I interviewed at Hortonworks, they gave me homework. And I wanted to do something with Spark because that was the new thing, kid on the block. But Chris, and thank you, Chris, for the huge opportunity you gave me there, made me do a storm thing. And the fun thing is, when I gave him my thing, I actually found a library framework, something that Hortonworks had never heard of to do things in storm. It was such a crazy time. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, fun little aside here. So I came more from the infrastructure side, and I'd worked with Chris in a previous life at a previous organization. And my interview homework was to basically go and like build a Hadoop cluster. So I did that. Like I went and built something using the fabulous Ambari, as was back then, you know, I built this cluster in a cloud environment, and it was all working wonderfully, and you know, I'd been like sharing like screenshots of it working and doing things and sending them to Chris. I was very excited, and I went for like the actual interview, and that morning God, I'd managed to click a button on Ambari and delete the whole cluster. thankfully Chris realized, like Chris was very understanding, and said, yeah, like Ambari's got some rough edges, we really need to like fix really? The you can accidentally like delete your cluster without having to acknowledge things and stuff like that. And thankfully, I I'd been like sharing pictures of like progress that I'd been doing.
And fake news. But, fake news.
Yeah. Oh man. Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's half the fun there. I mean, you build stuff and you kind of hoped it worked, and if it didn't work, it kind of died on its own anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, good old days. But then the world changed.
Well, I mean, before we take it too much further, I think there was also this was around the time where, because you mentioned like caching layers and things like that. This was also the time where you started to see hard disk, SSD layers, and in memory all kind of playing together as like a tiered architecture as well. This was a time where like SSDs had been around for a while before this, but this was the time where, comparatively speaking, I seem to recall that they were starting to get a lot more affordable for the capacities and the like huge increases in speed.
Affordable for enterprises. We're not talking consumer grade here, because these are also a SATA SSD, so they were faster, but not as fast as by a mile than the NVMe's we have today.
Yeah, nothing like the NVMe stuff we have today. But and it was so, you know, I agree. You're right. Like real time real time came first. Then had kind of a real, almost like a renaissance, like a complete reinvention of the big data world when machine learning was like the next level of I always, when I talk to people about this time, I sort of, up until that point in my career, I'd been at various different organizations and various different places, and again, very much focused on open source, and I'd seen things continuing to accelerate, but this time, this sort of, you know, 5-ish years that I spent in the big data space was, up until that time, like the fastest and the most aggressive level of like continual innovation. Every day, every week, every month, every year, it felt like the space had almost like reinvented itself and gone in exploded into a brand new area and was dominating that. And I think that sort of that machine learning, the big data space just reinvented itself almost overnight. Like it was so different all of a sudden. Like people were not just, you know, typing big long SQL queries against petabytes of data, but they were, you know, they were doing like crazy levels of analysis and prediction and like things that even like a year or 18 months ago would have been just complete pie in the sky.
Yeah, I really agree. I mean, the whole creativity wave there was amazing. If you didn't go to a Hadoop summit 1 year, you were a dinosaur. You had no idea what's happening. But I disagree that it was only machine learning. I think the whole ecosystem was evolving that way.
Yeah.
And being a person that has invested a lot of time in machine learning, I've done a lot of stuff in machine learning. Go on LinkedIn, you'll see where I've been. I'm going to say, controversially, machine learning killed big data.
Now, we have talked a little bit about this topic before we start recording. So I know why it is that you're heading down this road, or why it is that you are proposing this. I'm
stating this unequivocally.
yes, of course you are. I think the thing that killed big data was I think the thing that killed big data was a few different things, actually. I think the one of the things that killed it was just too frigging difficult for the majority of organizations to be successful. It was too much. It was too many moving pieces. It was too expensive because you needed such a lot of expertise and experience to get the results that so many vendors promised. I also think another thing that killed big data was, and I think this is related to the first one, was the fragmentation that happened in the space. And you know, this whole idea of big data distributions, like the MapRs, the Cloudera's, the Hortonworks.
God, MapR.
I know. They really, that whole idea, there was almost like just too much stuff in one place. Like it couldn't survive. And so people ended up just focusing on certain areas. And I think, in my opinion, at least, I can see you shaking your head on the video, so I'll hand over to you in a minute. But in my opinion, that sort of the reason that I say that is because you started to see, you know, companies springing up, just taking pieces of the big data ecosystem and then running with them and being wildly successful, because they gave one particular area a lot more focus. Now, whether you're talking about, you know, Databricks or Confluent or, you know, any number of these different organizations that sort of spun out from this big data Hadoop sort of ecosystem. I think that is, you know, that's another one of the reasons why big data is no more, at least not in the sense that it was back then. But I know you disagree, so let's dive in.
Well, I don't disagree with the fact that big data was difficult and that it got fragmented. That definitely happened. But in my opinion, machine learning is the cause that it all went apeshit. Too difficult, yes. It was too difficult, but that was fine. If you needed big data in those days, you had a huge company and a lot of people who were working on this. You had a whole team of 20 people working just on the big data. But the moment that the hyperscalers and other companies saw the money dollars that machine learning gave them, because machine learning was something that could add to the service, now suddenly they had to sell it to everybody. Mm-hmm. And if you want to sell it to everybody, you have to make it easy. And if you make things easy, you make things actually less effective, because no UI will ever be as good as an API. API allows you to do everything. UI, by nature, is simplifying things, removing options, removing flexibility to make it easy to use. And again, yes, it was hard, but that wasn't a bad thing, because in those days, there were a handful of companies in the world that actually needed it. A couple of thousand more that could have benefited from it. And everybody else jumped on that wagon because marketing, commercials, and stuff like that pushed the idea in everybody's head that if you're not doing big data, you're doing it wrong. And yes, just think how AI is happening today, very similar. But that's why I say that the complexity wasn't a reason for it to die, because if it had stayed this complicated, the people who still needed it would still have used it and would have done nicer things with it. But because the dollar signs in the service industry, let's call it that, and not just pick out the hyperscaler specifically, they had to make it easier. And by making it easy, by making those UIs, they caused the fragmentation. Because I can make Spark easy, or I can make Storm easy, or I can make Hive easy, but a full, complete, end-to-end big data Hadoop solution, well, we tried it on Body, and Cloudera had, what's their name again for their UI interface? I don't know, I forget the name. It's the one that's still being used today, I think. But anyway, they tried it and they stayed very, because you can't do this. And that's automatically going to lead to things getting fragmented, because Databricks, they took Spark and made Spark easy. I'm putting very big air quotes here, because the problem with easy is, it's not. It's not because you have a very simple user interface and you click, 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 and now it does something, that you understand what it does behind the scenes. And that's why I think a lot of projects failed under the easy button. A lot more projects failed than under the it's all hard and difficult button. Because if you start with something and it's hard and difficult and you know you have to put effort into it, you'll put it in or you won't start, which means a lot of projects that are doomed to still fail won't even get started and therefore not fail. But because the vendor said, oh, it's easy, just go here. I was at Microsoft at that time. They had HD Insights. Just go to the cloud, click three buttons, and you have a Hadoop cluster. We do everything for you. That was I've been gone there for 6 years now. HD Insight probably doesn't exist anymore, so I can be honest about it. It was a horrible product. Yes, it did exactly what it said. It's exactly what's on the tin. It made Hadoop easy to do two, maybe three things. And if you stepped aside, outside of that little bubble of what it's supposed to do, it was so hard, so much harder to fix it when it broke or to do more than what it just came with out of the box. And again, all of these things together, in my opinion, were engendered by machine learning, because machine learning is something that a lot of smart people on the money side saw as something they could sell per minute, per second, per API call. And that's a business model. And that kind of led to everything else. And that's why I'm not saying machine learning is bad. Machine learning is great. As I said, I spent way more time than I should on machine learning. But it was the catalyst, if I can reuse your word, towards the implosion of what was the original big data scene. Because obviously big data isn't dead, it's still very much alive, but in a much different form, and in a form that really doesn't allow the creativity, the let's just throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks and put smart people in the group together. That kind of big data, very rare these days.
Yeah. I was just
did that make sense?
It does make sense.
Because again, my opinion, my bubble, you don't have to agree with me. That's just how I see it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean you, I mean everybody.
It does make sense. I was actually looking at a couple of different sort of companies and seeing, you know, how they're doing since things have changed over the last 10-ish years. And like, if you look at Confluent, for example, you know, their peak was sort of late November 2021. You know, they hit sort of nearly $100 a share, and then they then dropped to, you know, they've bumbled between $20 and $40 per share for the rest of time, like over the last basically from early 2022 onwards, the stock price just goes between $20 and $40. If you look at
and that's because they simply don't have the service kind of offering. They do it now, but in those days they missed that boat. And I think it's a good boat to miss. But if the others are doing it, you kind of
But if you look at Snowflake, it's exactly the same picture. Now they had a peak late 2020, and they went up to nearly $400 a share. Mm-hmm. And but they also had a peak November 2021, and it went up to again nearly $400 a share, $392. But then by similar sort of timeline, only a couple of months later, like June 2022, it had dropped to about $120 a share. And from that point onwards, up until today, they basically sort of go between, you know, 120 and 200-ish. Now, right now, they're at the highest they've ever, not right now, but up until very recently, they're at the highest they had been, up at nearly $250 a share, but like nowhere near the level that they were back at the peak when they were very, very much. And to me, that was the... They got such a boost from when that fragmentation, like when the Hadoop ecosystem in my mind exploded, not in a good way this time, but exploded as in like fragmented and just all the different things went their different ways. You could almost say that the Hadoop part of the ecosystem actually imploded. You know, MapR basically went out of business. Hortonworks and Cloudera merged together, and in order to try and consolidate that space, and you know that they famously sort of both companies IPO'd not particularly successfully, in my personal opinion, and then obviously after they merged. Cloudera went private again, bought by a venture capital company. I chat to folks there who are still there occasionally, and they seem to be still tootling along doing their thing. But it's nowhere near the same kind of thing anymore. That is, at very best, it's steady state. Much like, interestingly, many of the things that spun out from that ecosystem. Now, the one one of the ones, I won't say the one because I'm sure there are others as well, one of the ones that's a little bit unique is Databricks, that I think, you know, you could never really know for sure because they're still a private company at this point, which is very interesting. But, you know, they have continued to do funding rounds, have continued to grow very successfully. And I think, you know, quite have, they've probably been one of the spin-off companies of the big data world that have done the best, I think.
Well, it's the only one that still is a name that will be recognized here and there. So yeah, definitely. I do want to go back first to your comments about Snowflake. I think Snowflake is out of category here. Their stock price was kind of the new way of doing things. Before you go to market something, a lot of hype, a lot of marketing, a lot of promises, and people are stupid and believe it. So price goes up and then they have to prove it. And it turns out that it's not that, because again, easy buttons for storage don't exist. And that's what they were trying to sell, basically. Now they got a nice product. I mean, the thing they built isn't bad, but they overhyped it hugely. And for some reason, the stock market the last 5 years, let's say, every single time they make the same mistake. And AI is really leading the way here as well. Again, we can talk about AI in another episode here. Databricks, I think they got big because they kind of sold their soul to the devil. And I don't mean it in a bad or a good way, just in a matter of speech, because they went very close to Microsoft's cloud. And anything cloud, again, that's where the money was. So they were the ones that fairly early also got that as a service idea, which in my opinion is a very bad way of doing business. If you're buying from it, not if you're selling it is great. And that's why they have been able to remain independent and yes, still a household name, but I do think they are struggling a little bit with relevancy for themselves, because the amount of use cases where you actually need them is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, again, being eaten by the bigger hyperscaler service industry, whatever you want to call it. Will it disappear? Probably not. I mean, Cloudera is also still around and doing stuff, I guess. So I don't think the Databricks is in any risk of disappearing anytime soon.
Oh, God.
I don't see them growing a lot anymore either. And I think I can say this. I talked to some people at Databricks a while ago, and I was very surprised, because when I talked to them, I thought, oh, we're going to talk about machine learning and that kind of stuff. Almost didn't come up. Of course, they also talked about Gen AI, because who doesn't? But they were mostly talking about databases, about star schemas and other kinds of schemas and things like that, which really took me aback, because I saw them as a machine learning, not AI perhaps, but definitely machine learning powerhouse. Well, they see themselves as a database. Data lake or data lake house is what they call it, I think, oriented. So more of a big data kind of database, but still storage and analysis on data is their main thing. And the machine learning doesn't really figure in that much anymore. Again, apart from jumping on the Gen AI hype, which everybody does. I was really surprised by that, because that's not the spark that I remember. But for them, good job. They've been able to pivot, stay relevant, and make money, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, 8,000 or so employees at this point.
Yep. And they're kind of big, actually, for the amount of money they make.
Yeah.
Which you can do if you're not on the stock exchange.
Yeah, yeah. One kind of, again, this is a little bit of a random aside, but just thinking about other companies in the space, as it were, Teradata is kind of wild in that, they were the old school EDW back in the day. They partnered with big data companies, like they partnered with Hortonworks. Exactly. They partnered with Hortonworks. They partnered with Cloudera as well to get into that space as well. But like compared to some of the other organizations, you know, Teradata back in the day was almost like was one of the top tier, if you like, EDW solutions, like very, very expensive, beloved by its users in a lot of cases because it was so expensive. And
Stockholm syndrome.
Well, maybe a little bit, but if you look at the stock price over the last, you know, sort of six-ish years, actually, sorry, that was over the last 5 years. Yeah, so over the last, like basically since 2007, which is when they kicked off. But if you sort of, you know, fast forward to, well, it really doesn't matter when you fast forward to, because basically their stock price has kind of bumbled between about $15 to about, like, it once peaked back in, you know, 2012 at nearly $80, but most of the time it's been between, you know, $20 and, you know, $50 or thereabouts, and right now it's back down at about 21, which I don't know, this is one of those crazy things about it's stock market doing stock market things, I guess, but you know, compared to some of the other numbers that we've just been talking about, you know, from a venerable data vendor, I should say, that was in the space, it's sort of, yeah, kind of crazy how that's, you know, how that seems to be valued nowadays.
It's not crazy. I mean, big data certainly ate some of their lunch, but I think cloud has taken most of it because Teradata equaled CapEx, capital expenses. Yeah. A lot of capital expenses you pay millions now and then don't pay for it, or you have support contracts, of course, but then you benefit from your investment over the next 5 years. In the last 10 years, apart from outsourcing, the whole CapEx to OpEx operation has also been going very, very well for most, except for the ones actually working it. And that's why I don't really am a fan of cloud. I mean, sometimes cloud is a good thing and it's something you need and something that's useful and it's flexible. And yes, fine. But cloud is OpEx, which means, yes, you don't have the initial investment, but you will pay a lot more, I mean, orders of magnitude more over the runtime of your project. And if you don't have the capital equipment, the capital to do the CapEx expenses investment at the start, then yes, cloud is a way to start. But I mean, if we talked about this before, cloud is good when you're a small company trying to make something, so you don't have money, you have to do something. And when you're an multi-international, ever-present, you need to have data centers everywhere, cool, use the data centers from the hyperscalers, they're there anyway, so we have some advantage from there. But in between, for me, a company should start maybe in cloud, but then try to get rid of cloud by gathering the money together. I mean, just for me, my little home lab here, when I looked at it, also 10 years ago, I think, when Azure was just starting up, I guess, I could build all my mail server and my DNS server, whatever. I could put it in a cloud VM somewhere. It would have cost me so much more than the hardware I bought almost 10 years ago, which is still running totally good. And Dave is giving me small indications that we will talk about cloud next time, one of the next episodes, so I shouldn't talk about cloud too much. But it was it was about Teradata. So Teradata cloud kind of ate their lunch, mostly, I think. But anyway, that was your side. So put us back on track.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're sort of towards the tail end of the big data story, in my mind at least. Like we saw huge fragmentation, we saw lots of organizations spin out from this with their own little focuses, like we've talked about them. Some of them have been more successful than others. You know, big data, fast forwarding to, you know, where we are today, isn't really a thing that people talk about as a thing itself anymore. Not in my opinion. I very rarely hear that word, or those words, I should say, come up. But I think a lot of, in some ways, that's because what was considered big data back then has just become it's just data now. It's often on a blob store and a cloud provider, you know, it's just data now. It has lost its magic and its mystery in many ways. And I don't know, in some ways I miss the crazy levels of creativity and innovation. But it does also feel that the space matured in such a way where a lot of the there were lots of crazy things that spun up that made no sense.
Yes.
Yeah, God love the crazy people, but like some of the stuff that spun up was just completely bonkers. And you know, would clearly never be a thing for the long term. But by God, they made a good try of it. And I think, you know, what we have seen now is, you know, some fairly standard patterns emerge, some you know, vendors that have like figured out what their niche is and are now building on that in a fairly standard and perhaps more traditional way. But it's a very different world today than it was back then, 10-ish years ago.
Yeah. Also, don't forget that big data was a big hype as well. There was a moment in time that people actually said, throw away all your SQL, replace it by NoSQL, because SQL doesn't have a reason to be anymore. And when you said maturing, yes, I think we've now matured in a point that we understand that some things are good in structured databases, some things are good in unstructured databases, big data is good for some things, and that will also have engendered the fragmentation a little bit, that it's not a black or white, but it's a gray area, which it always is. And that also then settled down and people using things they need to use. The whole surfacification, that's a word now, has happened. So you don't have to deploy your things anymore. You can just dump it in the blob store somewhere and have Kudu or whatever Amazon has as query language. I have no idea. I don't do anything with Amazon to do your analysis. So it just becomes a tool you use and not an infrastructure you maintain. But I think it's sad because I'm at my current company now for over 6 years. And a big part of that is that there are simply no sexy, funny, creative things happening. I mean, when I started at Hortonworks, I think I had like 5 or 6 companies I was interviewing with just to see which one is going to be the juiciest, the one that I can do most with. When I went to Microsoft, same thing. There was so many options. And I went to my current employer, same thing, 6 years ago, so many options and comparing things and okay, this looks good. Now, sure, on LinkedIn, I get recruiters every day of the week, but there's just nothing there. It's all AI, and I can talk about that from day for today. I have to wait for next time. It's all cloud, and I can't talk about that either. I feel so limited here. But apart from those two things, there's just nothing happening. The whole two-word thing I'm not allowed to talk about have sucked all the attention towards it. And when you think a lot of stupid things were built in big data, it has nothing compared to that two-word thing I'm not allowed to talk about. But again, I think it's sad because it was a great time for innovation, for open source. I mean, open source exploded thanks to big data. Then open source, something we're going to talk about on a later episode as well, so I'm not going to go deep in there either.
But just, I mean, so many things that Jon can't talk about because he's got to save up his energy to talk about them later. But no, I think we've done our our progenitor, our spark of inspiration, no pun intended, for this podcast as a good sending off.
Yes,
it's
fun
the
to talk about.
Yeah, it is the thing that inspired this podcast to exist.
Yes.
We were both in a space that was evolving so rapidly, and this, I wouldn't say gave us an excuse, but it...
Definitely a reason.
It gave us a reason to go beyond where
masses.
Yeah, but it gave us a reason to go beyond where we would have naturally just gone had we just done our jobs and done the research that we needed to do our jobs. Like, this caused us, at least in my mind, this caused us to go kind of way outside of you know, the remit of our particular roles at the time.
Yes and no. I said this before on the podcast. The main reason I'm doing the podcast is to learn about stuff. And in those days, you had to learn all the time because of the speed of innovation was impossible to maintain. And for me, the podcast has really been a vehicle to just be not forced, because I like learning, but to be forced to learn about everything. And today, yeah. I would not start a podcast today for so many reasons.
All right. Well, anything else? Any last words?
No, as I said, good old Hadoop. My life would definitely not have been the same without it. I've gotten so many chances, so much heartache as well, thanks to this little elephant. But it has been a real 10-year journey.
Indeed. Indeed. So with that is all the time we have for today. You can, as always, support this podcast by becoming a Patreon, and every contribution really does help. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Big Data Dave.
And my name is this a good moment to mention that I forgot to press the record button, Will?
We look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.